Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to the Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast. I am Andy Zoltzman, and this is the exclusive world official. I've got those words in the wrong order. A world official, world exclusive official review. You can't get it anywhere else. I've got there in the end. Of day three of the Oval Test, a day of classic basballistic cricket. England 389 for 9 in the day, scoring at breakneck pace, only 80 overs bowled. Alongside the all-action cricket, we have no action anything for long periods as people just mill around, 10 overs short of the supposed hypothetical requirement. Will those 10 overs prove as crucial as the 25 or so overs lost in Old Trafford? Time will tell, but almost certainly not. Australia looking once again battered, and then a late clatter of wickets that kept the door just faintly ajar for the baggy greensers to win the game and secure a 3-1 series win, which, were they to do it, A, it would be one of the great fourth innings chases, and B, it would be one of the most misleading scorelines in any sporting event ever. But such is the joy of Test cricket. Joining me to discuss this, back from his holidays, where he has been, largely insulated from cricket in France, it's producer Chris. Chris, how was it trying to follow the Ashes in France? I've been overseas during previous Ashes, and it's quite a harrowing process. I was in Norway for the first test in 2019.
Wow.
Desperately trying to get the scores of a fluctuating game while travelling through trains in mountains.
Andy, it was very difficult. The French, it appears, are not into cricket. I think that Olympic silver medal they picked up, you know, that 120 odd years ago has really got to them, and they seem to have rejected the sport in its entirety. I did, up against some trees, I did see some abandoned cricket stumps.
Oh, right. Nice.
That was the only trace of cricket I saw in 2 weeks, other than desperately trying to wave my phone around for 4G to get some live cricket or some podcasts to try to make sense of what was happening. It was a challenge, but I come back and I am literally astonished that England haven't won this Ashes series based on everything I read.
Well, yeah, it has been kind of strange. And again, I think when we look back on this series, whatever happens, those key moments that we've talked about in those first two tests will, I think, irritate England cricket fans for the rest of all eternity. I mean, I have friends who are still annoyed about what happened in the 1936-37 Ashes series decades before they were born. So,
friends, this is you, Andy.
Well, it's me and maybe one other friend who also works on cricket commentary on the radio. So, okay, you've narrowed that demographic down to people who have taken cricket obsession to a literally professional level. But anyway, the point stands, Chris. For as long as people give a shit about Test cricket, which might not be that long, if the administrators get their way, people will look back and study this series as almost a morality tale for what humans can achieve and the mistakes they can make. And that's what's made it so glorious and fascinating. And the end of play yesterday, a huge surprise sprung by Stuart Broad, who has been absolutely fantastic, not just in this series, but over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. And he's had this late period in his career where he's sort of recaptured the magnificence of his first peak after dipping for a couple of years around about 2016 and 2017. Suddenly, And this was pretty much as out of the blue as retirement announcements come, announced he was retiring. He's just passed 600 wickets at Old Trafford, 602 currently. So, if he could finish with 612, what a story that would be. Or Jimmy Anderson on 690, maybe he'll take all 10 and a walk off. I think, if that did happen, Chris, if Jimmy Anderson took all 10, including his 700th wicket, I would assume that a golden wing chariot would just swoop down from the heavens and take him off. And he would never be seen again, and it would be the greatest moment in the history of humanity. But
Read the full laws, Andy, but maybe it's already there.
It did catch everyone by surprise, yeah. Particularly as he's been so good. There's no sense of anything coming to an end.
Oh, I actually have to say, as a fan, I felt disappointed because I was like, there's more to come from him, and I want to see him do more. But I do get why. The biggest problem I have is that today. Assuming him and Anderson go out to bat together, maybe not, maybe they open the bowling together. It just seems like an elaborate ploy to upstage or hide the fact that it's also Jimmy Anderson's 41st birthday today. So, and I just wonder if that's going to cause some tension in the dressing room.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I hadn't thought of it from that point of view. So you're basically saying he's blowing out the candles on Jimmy's cake. Well, look, well, this could cause ructions in the England dressing room.
It might be what Jimmy needs.
Yes, because everyone had thought maybe Jimmy would announce his retirement, but I think he basically views his career as reaching the midpoint, frankly. So I did see him, he was warming up bowling left-arm spin on the outfield at Old Trafford, and that's not, Wilfred Rhodes was bowling left-arm spin for England when he was about 52, so that could be the future for Jimmy Anderson. It's going to be quite, I think, an emotional day today after, the sheer longevity of those two broads been playing for England since late 2007, Jimmy since 2003, which is just absurd by historical standards. And they've had the era of central contracts and modern sports science. And since 2015, in Anderson's case, I think 2016, in Broad's case, they've not played international white ball cricket. So they've just focused their skills and their fitness on the periods of the year that England play Test cricket. And it's been an extraordinary stories of persistence, commitment, yep, and improvement. And they both had quite bad starts of their Test careers, averaging 39 and 40 after 20 Tests and becoming two of the finest bowlers that England have had. So what a time it would be. There's a stat, I was looking for stats to talk about today. England, six players have reached 300 runs in this series. That's the first time England have ever had six 300 run batters in the same Ashes series. And Broad and Anderson, what a way it would be were they to bat for 2 days and both make, in the high 200s to reach 300 runs themselves. What a story again. England would lose the series, obviously, but it would be what an occasion that would be. A last wicket stand of 550 odd. So let's not rule them out. no team's ever had seven players either side with 300 runs in a single Ashes series. So this baseball team likes breaking records, but that would probably be their weirdest one. This might be the last day we see Stuart Broad. It might go to the fifth day. Who knows? If it goes to the fifth day, I think it's going to be very exciting. What's your... my hunch is, and the weather forecast is a bit dicey today, but if there's no weather, and when I say by no weather, I mean no rain. Obviously, there will be weather, whatever happens. I think England might win it today. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, all evidence points to Australia folding pretty quickly, sure. They look exhausted. They look out on their feet. I guess they have that motivation. Just, it feels like a really big number. Having watched England in the 90s, I still feel they're 100 short.
They were 332 for four yesterday, so 320 ahead, and then finished 389 for nine. It felt like they could have absolutely... nailed the porpoise to the how does that phrase end? I don't know, but anyway, they could have completely shut the door, but tends not to be the way this team works. I don't know if they thought, oh, hang on, we like to dangle a carrot, there's a possibility that we could eat the carrot, and then they regurgitated the carrot and dangled it anyway. I'm not quite sure, but Australia have that glimmer.
I think it just summed up baseball at its best and weirdest today. There was a number of things that really struck me statistically and in terms of style of play. So first of all, if we can go back to the opening partnership, Crawley now has enough. So Crawley's now, unless Khawaja does something good today, is the top scorer in the series. That's right. And I think in terms of home Ashes series, that technically makes him the new somewhere around Graham Gooch or John Edrich, something like that. Is that right?
Yes. Well, he's 480 for the series, average 53. As we talked about before, he has been consistent to the most uncrawlyish degree. It is barely conceivable. Played as superbly again yesterday, almost with a bit more control than he had in that century at Old Trafford. Made 73 at almost a run a ball, and again a sort of a restrained start, and then this eruption of fantastic stroke play. And you know, I for one would have left him out at the start of this summer, and it's one of a number of selection calls that, when you look at the summer as a whole, have been, well, obviously in Crawley's case, completely justified. But you know, that selection of Bairstow as keeper essentially kept Crawley in the team, unless they were to leave someone else out. But the stats coming into this over the past, well, sort of his past 25 tests before this summer, he'd averaged 22. So you know, if you're going to keep folks, play Bairstow as a specialist batter, Crawley you'd have thought would be the one to miss out. They've stuck with him. He has been the benefit of probably more selectorial patience than any cricketer in history, with the possible exception of West Indies' Carl Hooper, who also came good in sort of having played 35-plus tests and then had a really good few years for West Indies, and similarly majestic player to watch in full flow. But his 480 runs in this series, in Ashes series in England, you've got to go back to 1997 to find an opener with more runs in an Ashes series in England. That was Australia's Matthew Elliott, 556 in a six-test series. Chris Rogers also had exactly 480 in 2015. And for England, Mike Atherton in 1993 had 553. That also a six-test series. So it is, not a complete surprise that Crawley would succeed to this degree, certainly on the pitches that they've made this year, which haven't had a huge amount of lateral movement, as we talked about before. But he has been extraordinarily successful, and I'm not sure you can say remorselessly consistent, because the way England play, they don't really bat long enough to be remorseless. He's been a huge success for England, and glorious to watch as well.
It's been wonderful, and just to show how well he's done, David Warner could come out today and absolutely destroyed Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad's big day, score a double century, and still score fewer runs in this series than Zach Crawley.
Yes.
And that's pretty damning.
Yeah, if he does that. I mean, that is the biggest if I may quote myself, since Rudyard Kipling started projecting the titles of his poems onto the night skies above Gotham City. One of the interesting things about this series is there hasn't been a single sort of dominant player. There's no, I think I might have mentioned it the other day, the 12 different players have scored a century or taken a 5-wicket haul, but none has got two entries on the honours board. So, but lots and lots of players have featured, and that's sort of, yeah, the box set character of this ensemble piece, that these characters sort of float in and out of being the key players. But Crawley has been consistently good.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Another comparison for you. So now Harry Brook has 20 completed innings, which for some statisticians means you can start really understanding how statistically relevant he is. And he is somewhere above Headley and Pollock. And I don't mean Dean and Sean in that.
the interesting thing, so we're talking about sort of career averages here, and if you put a 20 innings filter on it, Brook is second currently, averaging 62 after 12 tests, 20 innings, almost 1200 runs. Only Don Bradman is ahead of him, 99.94. The player below him, disappointingly, is Australia's Adam Voges, who played over a brief span midway through the last decade, 20 tests almost 1,500 runs at 61.8. 31 innings he played. And quite often, you know, we'd looked at 20 innings as a minimum. And after Adam Voge's career, people said, well, we better go with a 32 innings minimum, just because it didn't seem right to have Bradman, Voges, Pollock, Headley, Sutcliffe. So Voges had to be removed from that. He had a curious career, a lot of, but I mean, sort of failed in the Ashes that he played in 2015, but had some mountainous runs, particularly in home series for Australia. So Brook is up there in terms of, you know, it's kind of difficult to look at current players in the all-time rankings, particularly early in their careers, but he has had one of the best ever starts to his test career. 11 50-plus scores in 19 innings. And in the last test, I think he was the third fastest to 10 50-plus scores. And he's in, the I think, the top 12 most runs in a first 12 tests of a career. And when you watch him play, there's a few little glitches. I think when the ball has moved around this series, he's looked a little vulnerable, as most, well, all players are. But the quality of his stroke play when he gets going is extraordinary. And he's made, and without, you know, having a massive series again, he's had numerous 50s, played some really influential innings, notably the second innings at Leeds. And the excitement about the potential of Harry Brook over the next, 10, 15, 20, 25, if sports science keeps improving, he could play till he's 73, is understandably got everyone very excited.
So I've got two subjects. They're very closely interlinked with each other. I don't know what we want to start with here. And that is the speed at which England are scoring 300 runs in innings versus the amount of maidens that are getting bowled or not getting bowled. Where do you want to start?
Well, the maiden stat is, again, something we've been tracking pretty much since the second test of this series, and the dot ball percentage, the difference in scoring rates, which is now well above 1.4 runs and over. For the series, the biggest ever in Ashes history, is the difference between the two teams' scoring rates. England reached the 300 in the 58th over yesterday, the second quickest that a team has reached 300 in Ashes history, behind the 52nd over that they reached in at Old Trafford. England now have 7 of their 8 fastest 300 scores in terms of when they've reached 300 in innings, 7 of their 8 fastest since Stokes and McCullum took over last summer. So and I think, well, we've seen this throughout. Australia still, after 5 tests, don't seem to have a strategy or a method for restraining England. They've tried passive fields. Yesterday they kept the a slightly more aggressive field for a bit longer, and that didn't work either. As I said, this England team presents very unfamiliar problems that are extremely difficult to solve, even for bowlers of the calibre that Australia have. Todd Murphy did quite well yesterday, still went at 5 and over, which is completely, you know, not bad against this England team now. Picked up 3 wickets, could have had a couple more, bit unlucky with a couple of very close LBW shouts, and bowled out Joe Root for 91 when it looked like Root could bat until the end of eternity. And this was, I think, my favourite stat from yesterday, that Joe Root had only twice in his career been bowled out by right-arm spinners. One was the Sri Lankan Ramesh Mendis in Sri Lanka, I think, in the 2018-19 series. And one was Ireland's Andy McBride earlier this summer when, as I remember, Root was having a wild hack before a declaration. So,
hey, Andy McBride is a wonderful spin bowler.
I'm not saying he's not, Chris.
He did him with guile and flight.
Those two are not mutually exclusive. So Ashwin and Lyon, the two great right-arm spinners of the current age, have bowled between them almost 240 overs at Joe Root and not hit his stumps once. So that was a nice moment for Murphy, who stood up pretty well under the withering assault of Basbalian cricket.
Can we talk a little bit then about oval chases? For such a great deck, there are not a load of massive chases there. So is there anything that can give Australia hope here, or is history against them?
Well, I think the hope that they can take is that fourth inning stats are generally completely irrelevant when it comes to the game at hand. There's not been many big fourth innings chases anywhere, so you look at the stats and they don't always tell you the full story. There have been some quite big fourth innings at the Oval. 1979 India, I think, were 9 runs short of chasing 438, finished 8 wickets down in an exciting draw. But I don't think when Australia goes out to bat, they're thinking, right, let's channel the spirit of Sunil Gavaskar from 44 years ago. India a few years ago, in 2018, they were chasing 460 odd, I think, in the fourth innings and lost early wickets. And then Rishabh Pant, who made his first test 100 in that innings, and KL Rahul had a big stand, and they got to within about 120 with still five wickets left before then a late collapse. But I guess showed that the, you know, pitches now don't deteriorate as much. Set against that, we've got Steve Smith's second innings problems, that he's not past 35 in a second inning since the start of the 21-22 Ashes, and he's never scored a fourth innings 100. So, I mean, maybe this is the time, if they've managed to get him to have any sleep during this game, maybe Smith could do something big for in the fourth innings for almost the first time in his career. Quick word on Johnny Bairstow. He's had three innings of 75 plus in this series. First England wicketkeeper ever to have three innings of 75 in a single test series, and only the third wicketkeeper from either side to have three 75 plus innings in an Ashes series. Brad Haddin in 2013-14 in Australia, and Ian Healy in 1993 in England. So again, one of the questionable selections at the start of the series, and, you know, with the first two tests it backfired in terms of Bairstow's wicket keeping, and in the first three tests his batting wasn't particularly productive after that first innings of the series, but he's played a couple of big ones both after keeping wicket in the last two tests. So yeah, I think overall England selectors can turn to the various sceptics from the start of the series, of which I was unquestionably one, and point to some numbers.
Okay, so Andy, to wrap, we obviously talked about Stuart Broad, big day for him. Jimmy Anderson, I didn't mention this at the start of the show. So Jimmy Anderson, just to show how old and long serving he is, he made his one day international debut in a team that featured Alex Stewart, who's now in his 60s. Alex Stewart made his one day international in a team that featured Eddie Hemmings, who's in his mid 70s. Eddie Hemmings made his first class debut in 1966. That's how long serving Anderson is. But I also wanted a little mention, because it's probably also Moeen's last test, who is I just love with all my heart. And the way he got out yesterday was just classic S&M Basbalian cricket, wasn't it?
It was, yes. And it was a classic Moeen Ali innings. It was a few loose shots, a few moments of luck, some shots that you could write, a 12-volume set of sonnets about. He's just been a beautiful cricketer to watch, and a fascinating cricketer to watch, with so many different talents and so many infinite possible careers that he might have had and England used him differently. An ultimate team player, completely selfless, and also just, he's one of the most popular cricketers in terms of the warmth of the crowd reaction to him. Doesn't have the most spectacular statistics when you look at it objectively, but I think that camouflages quite how useful he's been to England. And I will miss watch. I mean, the thing with Moeen Ali is, in a Moeen Ali innings of 12, you're going to see probably at least two, possibly three shots that you'll just be purring over for the next, I don't know, 5-10 years.
Yeah. Well, enjoy today, Andy.
Yes, undoubtedly I will. Might be the last day of the series. This might be the last Bugle Ashes Zoltzkoss looking ahead to a day's play. We will do a series review if it ends today. If not, we will be back in the morning. In the meantime, may the cricket be with you. Amen. Thanks to producer Chris. And we'll be back in the near future. Goodbye.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.